This is Rackabix After Hours.
Yes, of course. Welcome, yes. Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 160. No, it's not 160 anything. It's Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 196, don't you know, old chap? And that's all of that I'm going to do today. Hello, I'm Ben. This is a music and technology podcast, and we're here with Pete for Rack Addicts After Hours-ing time. Have I said it three times? Probably. Depends what Pete's edited out of this intro. Firstly, Pete's week. What have you been doing? You said it might be quite exciting.
Well, for you...
Or interesting, yes.
For you, it might be quite exciting and interesting.
Are you calling me a big nerd without telling me what it is?
You can make your own mind up. Basically, I've been doing some bicycle renovation.
Yes, I am a big nerd, Pete. Do tell. That sounds awesome.
Right. I've decided that I need to refurb some of my bicycles.
They were in a bit of a pile under a tarpaulin
it wasn't good. So I did haul them into the workshop and start dismantling them. And then it's been time to reassemble.
Yes.
And that has been interesting.
Define interesting.
Well, interesting in one respect is that it's not that easy to find the components for slightly older bicycles.
Oh, have you been sort of replacing seized things and
broken
rusty
things
parts.
And right. bits and bobs and things like that. So primarily I'm working on two bicycles. One is a Cannondale.
I remember the Cannondale. Is this the one with the shock in the middle at the front?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Basically, that one's 24 years old. So parts are rare. And even rarer are the parts from the other bicycle, which is a Marin, which is 34 years old.
Ooh.
And yes, I've been scouring all the places trying to find the bits and pieces to replace it. The Marin is the one that's proving more difficult.
What's gone wrong with that one?
The left combined brake lever and shifter has decided to...
Oh no, it's flat bar brifters.
Yes.
They didn't make many of those.
And it is a Shimano, but it's finding one. I did find one person that had a brand new right and I need a left.
Oh no.
So the search goes on.
Tricky.
Or I could replace them for something else, but then the cost is going to start building up. I'm not sure if it's really worth it. With the Cannondale, we've gone much further and that is going well, other than I had to hand it over to some professionals earlier today.
Was there a strange proprietary fastener of some kind?
Yes and no. There's a weird combination of sizes on it because it's American handmade according to the labels,
right?
And it's got a mixture of metric and
that's fun
other stuff that the Americans have, which is not Imperial, it's their own system. Is it Whitworth? I can't remember.
I have no idea. That sounds horrifying.
Anyway, different sizes of fittings and so forth. We managed to get the disc brakes running.
Nice.
And checked all the fluids. That was all
good. It's hydraulic. Oh, okay.
Yes. And it uses very arcane calipers and pads and so forth. Nothing like the sort of technology you'd find today whatsoever. So, but we did get them going quite well, and then we got stuck on the derailleurs.
Oh, yeah.
Just couldn't get them to really behave themselves, so we gave up, threw the towel in and wheeled the bicycle down to a very local Kona distributor and had a very long chat with the gentleman there, and they're going to do what is required to a certain level. They're not going to go too mad. They said we're going to give it a what we call our general service, replace the cables and work on the selectors and all that type of stuff, and then get the derailleurs front and back running properly, because it's old school. Because I hadn't realized what you were telling me the other week, that things have switched around, so they're only having one on the front on the bottom bracket now, and everything is on the cassette.
That's the modern way. I imagine you've got on both of those, you've probably got three up front and something like five or seven at the back.
The Marin is a 3x7 and the Cannondale is a 3x9. But still very old school. But that's me, I'm a bit old school in that respect.
Well, if it ain't broke, that's why I went back to friction shifters, or a friction shifter, which that could be an option if the
the Marin doesn't end up working. Just get a couple of cheap friction shifters and cheap cable. Is that cable or hydraulic?
No,
on its brakes?
The brakes are centerpole.
Okay, it'd be all right then. Just get some standard levers. You can do that for cheap.
Yeah, I'm sure that can be sorted out. It's just I just wanted to make it
original.
Apparently, it's a thing, and I thought it was just me. But then you find out there's a whole fraternity
out there
of people doing exactly the same thing. I was made aware today also by the kind gentleman at the Kona distributor that there is a website called retrobike.co.uk.
I'm having a look now.
And I will be perusing it. And they did have a quick sort of shifty through it all and showed me various examples of the bikes that I had. And they're still quite valuable, strangely, because they've become collectible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here, there's a Lotus monocoque mountain bike, it looks like here. Lotus did some wild stuff. Yeah, look at that.
Oh, yes.
Weird.
Oh, yes. There's some very rare and still quite valuable bicycles on there. But there's also a forum. So if you're looking for spares, it seems to be the place to hang out if you're into retro biking.
Yeah, looks good. I think I might have to peruse.
Yes.
Just for some eyeballing of interesting old bikes.
Having said that, I'm not particularly into the fact that they're old, and I was looking at some very nice new bikes.
Oh, yeah, while you were there.
And you can get some real bargains.
Yeah, it's good stuff for not a lot of money these days.
Well, I was looking at one of the Kona bikes, and the specifications were very good, and it was available for the princely sum of £499, which I thought was quite amusing, because the Marin, which is 34 years old, cost £500 34 years ago.
Shall we do it?
Yes.
Shall we go for the inflation calculator? What do you say, 34 years?
Yeah, so 89.
89. And what was it?
500.
Place your bets.
I'm going to say 2,900.
1,264.
No, well off.
Still, it was a good one for its day.
Yes. And that's just a standard, looks like a normal steel tubed bicycle.
Mm.
Nothing weird, no suspension at either end. And the only strange thing, it has a strange kind of grey Teflon-like coating and orange Dayglo forks.
Awesome.
It was at the time.
And of course, Brifters, which is just odd.
Yes.
Do you kind of push them downwards towards the floor to kind of shift one way?
What, the...
The whole brake lever shiftery thing, or is that on the other bike?
The brake levers are pretty standard, and they're just cable to the centre poles. And then the shifters were two buttons on each side, or levers, you know, so one's shifting and one's dropping.
Oh, but it is a separate pod.
No, it's all one, it's a whole one mechanism.
Yeah, I was thinking of, there was, I think it was Shimano that made a sort of brake lever shifter assembly, and you'd sort of press down on the brake, sort of in this direction, to shift gears, which is just terrible.
No, it was nothing like that.
But either way, weird. One unit.
Yes, they were, I can't remember the model, but anyway.
Inconvenient, anyway.
Yes, but I'm not sure how far I'm going to go with that particular bike. I've still got some nostalgia. People keep saying, why do you keep all these old bicycles? But I've even got an even older one, which I might have mentioned before, which is a Holdsworth.
Wow.
And that one is, I want to say, 40 years old. That's a road racing bike.
Right.
Very old school. So yeah.
Down tube shifters?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe so. And also sort of wound tape on the handlebars and all the cables on the exterior.
Oh, yeah. So they go up and over onto the brakes, don't they?
Yeah, along the crossbar.
Yeah, nice.
So there's none of all this sort of discrete cable going into the handlebars and then into the frame and all this business.
It makes it way easier to work on if you can see the cables.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Mm.
I was looking at gravel bikes today as
Oh, yes.
So they had some with tubular steel frames and carbon fibre forks.
Yeah, that tends to be quite a common option. If you're going to do any carbon, it will start at the fork.
I was quite surprised at how chunky they are. I thought they would be quite sleek and sort of road racery.
There's a spectrum of them. There's the ones that are basically a mountain bike and the ones that are barely hardier than a road bike.
Yeah, so the
depends where you want to go.
Yeah, ones I was looking at were quite chunky, apart from the fact they had drop handlebars.
Indeed.
I was quite drawn to them, strangely. But no, I'm still sort of torn because I do want to get an e-bike.
Yeah.
But they are eye-wateringly expensive.
Just a smidge.
Even the basic ones. And the basic ones aren't kitted out that well because all the money's gone on the motor.
It's a bit of a shame. And then if you want a really good one, you want that mid drive thing where the motor is in the cranks.
Yes.
Compared to the hub motors.
All the ones I've looked at are crank motors.
Mm.
And the three makes that I've mostly seen, there are some weird special ones, are Yamaha, Bosch and Shimano.
Yeah. Bosch definitely got up there quite early on, I think, in the e-bike boom.
But I went to another another bicycle place yesterday to get some tyres, and that was quite an interesting. That's a sort of independent place called Gear Up.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a place that's close to Guildford and also one near Surrey University. And they are developing their own electric or e-bike.
Oh, really?
Yes. So they had a custom frame with a custom motor, and it was in development. And I can't remember the brand they had, but I believe it was a subdivision of Specialized.
Mm.
But it was a different brand name.
There's definitely a lot of brands that will have.
I know. I mean, there's so many brands now. It's eye-watering. But yes, I've got into all the nuances about various different qualities of gear sets and brakes and...
It's a minefield.
And and the rest of it.
And what brake pad compound are you going to be using? Yeah, you can go as far as you like, can't you?
Weirdly, potentially, if I was to sell the Cannondale, I'd most probably get enough money for it to buy a brand new, quite decent bike.
Oh, is that desirable as a vintage option?
Apparently, it's super rare.
Wow, good stuff.
So, who knows? But I've had it a long time. I've got quite a lot of nostalgia, and I just spent some money on it. So, I think most probably I'll just go and buy something else. My main problem with bicycles is storage.
Yes, that's my problem as well, given they are in my bedroom.
Yes. Well, my... Holdsworthy was suspended over the sofa as a wall-mounted objet d'art in my first house for about 10 years.
Wow.
So obviously I wasn't doing a lot of cycling in those days. Well, actually, I was cycling on the Marin, but I'd stop the... I've increasingly got less fond of cycling on the public highways.
It's not amazing.
Bloody dangerous.
Yeah. I've only had one altercation so far.
Well, you've been lucky.
Yeah, I mean, think I have.
I just feel like a target when I'm out on the road.
There was an academic study done, I think, in Australia, which I think was about how drivers sort of see and recognize other road users like pedestrians, cyclists, and whatever. And if they were wearing a helmet, the driver was less likely to perceive them as, you know, an actual human being.
Okay, that's
good. Which is quite a funny statistic that I can't remember the actual numbers from.
So you wear a helmet, you're not human.
Yeah. So the helmet, which might make you more safe, is less humanizing.
Mm, wonderful. But yeah, the intention is to really get back in the saddle, so to speak, and get really quite back to a decent level of fitness. I mean, I do a lot of exercise, a lot of walking, but it's not really the same.
Or to get the heart rate way up there.
Yeah, the real cardio stuff, and really get some sort of strength back in my legs.
Yeah, we can trundle some of the... There's some good paths around here.
Yeah.
Got to go check out that place that I'm not going to say, because it'll locate you.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's lots of bridleways, and if you've got the Basingstoke Canal, you've got lots of other bits and pieces that you can jump onto. And the most risky thing that you've got to deal with is a dog walker, possibly.
Well, yeah, with those extendable leads that go all the way across the path, they are a hazard.
Yes.
It's a nightmare.
Have you had much grief with dog attacks or anything like that?
I've nearly run a few over, but I haven't been commuting on sort of bike pathy, towpath type things for a long time.
Most of them seem okay, but some of them really object to bicycles.
Yeah. There was one of my least favourite interactions. I was on the Basingstoke Canal, coming up behind some lady just on her own, and sort of quite a long way away. Gave a couple of rings of the bell, kind of a ding ding, trying to be a, you know, how do you make it sound friendly? Either way, that's what I was going for. I slowed down, still approaching, no notice at all. Another friendly ring, nothing. Got it closer again, and, you know, really try and give it some. She just turns around and goes, "An excuse me would be nice." That's what the bell's for. Oh well, can't have it.
You could have a big bullhorn, couldn't you? Excuse me.
Or just, have you seen those videos of people who put car horns or train horns on their bikes?
Well, you can get the thing that it's not the real horn, but it's using a loudspeaker, but it's reproducing that kind of train klaxon type of
exactly
alarmist type thing, or a foghorn or something like that.
I should put an air raid siren on my front basket.
Yeah, or the horns of Jericho off a Stuka.
That would have some people jumping into the canal, I'd think.
Yes. Anyway, that's what I've been doing this week.
Lots of bikey stuff. Brilliant. I've just come from fitting mudguards, which is an unpleasant procedure when you also have to hacksaw off the spiky ends. Wouldn't recommend it. But last week I did do my first small amount of Christmas shopping.
It's a bit early, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit early. My partner wanted to do it. So I went along and visited two of the obvious English department stores. Do we call them department stores here? I don't really know. Fenwick's and John Lewis. the classics.
Yep.
It was heaving. Absolutely a horrifying experience it were. And the worst part of it was there was a queue for the parking ticket payment machine. Us Brits love a queue, but I didn't enjoy that one. Anyway, let's have some news, shall we? Here's a small one, which is cosmetic only, but have you seen the Electron Digitact and Digitone and Syntact 25th Anniversary Editions?
Yes, I have.
Thoughts?
It's an extra 100 quid.
It is a lot of extra cash, isn't it?
For effectively a metal.
I mean, they're metal anyway.
Yeah.
But this one's brushed and shiny.
Paintless.
Yeah. But excluding the money, because it is weird, cosmetically, purely on the looks, here we go, just to refresh your brain.
I just don't care.
You just don't care at
no,
all?
No, they're expensive enough as it is.
Yeah.
It's just an excuse to charge some more money.
It does come with a vintage, not a vintage, a limited edition cassette.
Of what?
Oh, some music that the Electron employees have made.
Oh, wonderful. What do you play it in if you haven't got a cassette player?
Buy a cassette player.
Oh, great. Electron are going to be starting to market their own cassette player in a minute.
Who knows? Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of how it looks. It's got white buttons as well, which, given the blue backlight on some of them, not very readable, and it will get all your finger grime on it. No, but they're there if you want a limited edition thing for €999.
My experience is that most customers tend to avoid these special editions.
Yeah.
Unless there is nothing else available.
Yeah, it's always the, oh, I'm afraid we've only got the limited edition all black keys. Oh, fine, I'll get that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We had the same with the NPCs.
Oh, of course, because they had the vintage looking one.
Yeah, that was more expensive initially.
Oh, yeah.
And then spookily it came down to the same price as the normal one.
Yeah, because nobody was buying them.
Yes, exactly.
I sort of see the appeal on that one slightly more, maybe.
Well, it's better than the red thing that they brought out now.
Yeah, there were a bunch of different colours of the Akai MPK Mini and friends.
Yes, there's definitely quite a few colours.
They were only about 10 are different, if I remember, at the time, so it wasn't too bad.
Pretty inexpensive anyway.
Mm.
But yes, these companies will insist on doing these things. Arturi are very keen on that type of thing, aren't they?
Yeah, they mostly just do the black edition. I remember when I was going to buy my Keystep, and I just missed out on the black edition of the original Keystep, and I emailed them because I say, oh, I'm from the shop. We sell lots of your stuff. Can you give me a cheeky? Are you going to do them again? They went, absolutely not. So of course they did.
Yeah, of course
they
did.
Very soon after I bought mine.
Yes.
Nightmare.
Someone freaked me out recently and suggested there'd been another round of Korg releasing the FS version of the 2600, the ART 2600.
Ah, I assume that proved false.
Yeah, I don't think it was real. I think it was the fact that people are still waiting or have been up to recently.
They really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Because there was one for sale on, it might be Reverb.
Yeah.
And they said they waited 2 years for it.
And then they just looked it on Reverb.
And then there was enough room in the studio when they got it.
Fair enough.
Allegedly.
Mm.
And the second-hand price seems to have dropped quite considerably.
Hmm.
Because people initially were flipping them for double.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were sort of nearly 7K or something like that. But now they seem to be going for about 4.5.
Hmm. What were they?
3.7, I want to say.
Hmm. They were cool, though.
Yeah, I wish I'd bought one. You always buy the M, 2600M.
That's the mini version,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it's two-thirds the size, but it's not quite the same, is it?
It's not the same.
It's got a nasty little keyboard with it.
Yeah, but the big one still had 3.5mm jacks, didn't it?
I assume so. I think we established very early on, because it's one of the first things we spoke about on the podcast.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
right.
Right. I don't know if it's episode one or one or two or something like that. And
so I got to play with one. I tested one for the international thing.
But I think it was yourself did a little bit of quick Googling and found out it wasn't 3.5, but it was a similar size, like a weird bespoke size.
No thanks.
Sort of around that, something like 3 or something like, or slightly bigger. Anyway, not 6.3mm quarter-inch size, which you'd expect it to be. Big.
Yeah, you want that satisfying...
No, it was some bespoke size.
Nah, gross.
Yes.
Mm. I was going to say, speaking of NPCs and stuff a while ago, but then we got distracted. Because, speaking of NPCs, have you seen the new Korg Chaos Replay?
I have seen a number of videos on that particular product.
Yeah, they've not been very kind, have they?
No. And it's not cheap. It's quite
$949 if you're looking at Korg's website.
Yes.
Very expensive.
And not available for quite some time.
No, not at all. And confusingly, it has USB-C for power, micro-B for data or something stupid.
And I think on the back it's all phono connections. This thing is being aimed at DJs.
Most certainly with those horrible RCA jacks.
Yes. So I think
And a ground connector. I didn't notice that last time I looked.
Because it's all geared up to connect to your DJ mixer.
Of course.
That's why it's all phono.
Yeah, and the old headphones and microphone on the front, that kind of thing. But yes, obviously there's a loop op video, because there always is, but the one that I saw, which was very unkind, was unkind but fair, I'll point out, was from Taetro, T-A-E-T-R-O. That was a very well thought out and well executed review. And the description starts, "I'm not a fan of the Chaos Replay." Yeah,
that backfired for Korg a bit then, didn't it?
It's not
because
so
they were dishing these out to simpluencers.
Exactly, it's everywhere, all across the subscription box.
I don't necessarily see this selling very well.
Nah.
I don't think that drum machine they brought out is selling at all well.
Which one? There was the drum log a while ago.
Yeah, that I think it's that,
that one.
Yeah, the black one.
Yeah, just looks like all the other log things. This guy?
Yep, that's the one.
I seem to remember Loopop's opinion of it was that it was just kind of not very gutsy, I think. Kind of what happened with the original Drum Brute.
Yes.
It sounds good, but yeah, it's not very angry or get up and go. You got to process it quite a bit first.
With the Korg one, not only have I not sold any,
oh yeah,
I've not had any inquiries about it at all.
Wow, that's no good at all.
Well, I suppose they do these things, but I don't know. I don't know what's behind the thought process for these designers of this equipment.
Who knows? Here's a thing that has recently got its second version, and I'm surprised I didn't catch the first version because it's really cool. Very niche, but I think it's really cool. This is from a company called D-Tronics, D-T-R-O-N-I-C-S, and the annoyingly named DT-RDX-V2, which is an editor for the Yamaha Reface DX. But it's a hardware control box thing with a stand, so it sits above it for full editing. Check this out. That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing. Yeah. That really is a thing.
Yeah, it looks great. And of course, you didn't have this much hands-on control on the original DX7 or anything else of the sort. You have a section called Common, which gives you an initialize button. Awesome. Algorithm, transpose, poly, mono, and legato. Pitch bend range, pitch envelope times 2, portamento time, LFO wave, LFO speed, LFO delay, LFO PMD, don't know what that means, phase modulation perhaps. Then you have an operator editing selection with two lots of 4 envelope generator rate controls, rate 1, 2, 3, and 4, which confuses me. Is that an ADSR? I've no idea. You then have KCS rate, LFO AMD, LF whatever. There's loads of hands-on control and it's really cool. Operator selection buttons on the right, on and off buttons, super cool little add-on for your, what's it called? Reface DX, that's the guy.
So does it only work with refaces?
That's a very good question. It's of course a MIDI controller. Ooh, has a power splitter cable, so you don't have to faff around trying to power both.
How much would one of these devices set me back?
It's not as bad as it could be, given that it's super niche and I imagine the production runs aren't big. It is a pre-order introductory price of €269 instead of €300.
It's nearly as much as the...
Very nearly, yeah.
DX Reface.
But if you're really into it, I think that's a brilliant addition.
In fact, I nearly bought one because we had a second-hand one. I think it was going for something like £150.
That's a screamer.
I know. I thought getting all those voices and so forth, I just can't get past those mini keys.
Yeah, I don't mind those particular ones on the Reface series so much because they are really good. They're not like the Micro Korg ones, which are just mushy, bendy, and disgusting. They are sort of decent Fatah feeling things, just small, and I get it, the small is annoying, but they're so nice. And Reface CP, what a classic.
Yeah, I mean they all sound good, the Refaces. They're very popular.
I've even seen quite a few of the organ around, even though that seems to be the most niche of them, the red one.
The CS seems to be the one that everyone seems to like.
Yeah, well, that's good. Our friend Telmo has one.
Yes, very popular.
So that is the D-Tronics DT-RDX-V2, pre-order now for €269.
What are they talking about, an SLA for it? How long do you have to wait if you order one?
I don't know what SLA means.
Service level agreement.
Does that mean shipping delay? I don't know. End of November.
Okay.
So they've not got a huge amount of time.
Should have said ETA, but, you know, expected time of arrival.
Yeah, I would have understood that one. Okay, do you remember I showed you a new, not quite released yet, mixer from Bored Brain Music? We're talking modular again, of course.
Vaguely, because there was a spate where there was so many...
The Exelon from Bored Brain.
That's a lot of mixer.
It is a lot of mixer. And you know what else?
Not unless you tell me.
You can have a lot more mixer.
Oh, it's got an expander.
There's an expander to give you input 7, 8, and 9 with all the same controls. So in total, you would have... So that's... 70 HP of mixer if you had both of those. And I assume there will be sort of a headphone output, potentially a Q module or something, but at least a headphone output, because there isn't one.
That's going to hog a lot of your case.
It is. I want to compare it to the fully expanded performance mixer,
which is quite big in itself. I might have to expand mine at some stage. Yes, I know. Why do mixers in Eurorack have to be so damned expensive?
Because they're just big.
I know, but you can get a big analog desk, you know, even an Allen & Heath, and it's still going to be cheaper.
The performance mixer LE, which is the expanded version, 10 channels, is 50 HP. So very compact in comparison.
Yes.
I suppose the faders and the channels and such on the performance mixer are quite narrow compared to the Exelon and Expander.
Mm-hmm.
Though you do have a fader that you can actually kind of put a finger on. They appear to be the same fader caps as, do you remember the Zoom Live Track range?
Yes.
Yeah, those kind of shape and size. So you can do a multi-fingered mix of a bunch of channels at once relatively easily, I think, should that be necessary for your workflow.
You can with the performance mixer if you've...
Oh, especially if you've got the little rubbery clear thing so it doesn't stab your fingerprints.
Yes.
Fingerpins. your fingerprints. No, your fingertips.
Yes.
Too much. Those things.
Yeah, those your digits.
Digitals indeed. Finally, this might not be news, it might be really old, but I just forgot it existed. You know the Shure SM7DB?
Yes.
Did we talk about it? I didn't know
it
existed.
Is that the one with the audio interface built into it?
It has a preamp in it, like the FET head or the cloud lifter.
Oh yes, we talked about it. It doesn't need a lifter.
Yeah, you just fan to power it and off you go. But yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
And it's a lot more money.
Yeah, what are these, like 360 odd without?
Something in that range.
Let's check on the current prices, because things have changed. Can't remember how much I spent on mine with the older staff priceage. SM7B, $379 currently, and the SM7DB, $499, £120 extra, when you can get a FET head for...
£60.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a good deal.
No, it does have two levels of boost.
But it also admits that the thing needs lifting.
Yeah, it does.
So it should be there in the first place.
Indeed. But yeah, you can get a little XLR audio interface as well in a bundle for only, how much is that more? £120 again. That's the MVX2U.
I'm just not buying it.
Nah, I'm hoping mine has a long and happy life.
Well, there's no reason. I mean, microphones literally go on forever unless they're abused.
Yeah, or kept in a humid environment or something. I suppose that's the only long-term kind of death they could suffer.
Possibly. I don't know what would degrade on them.
I imagine, yeah, humidity and high temperatures.
But you see with classic mics that go back decades and decades.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you think about the mic cupboards in all the big studios, there's ancient stuff in there.
Yes.
And often that's the best stuff for some reason. So they say.
Yeah, the classics.
I remember Andy talking about the first time he really used some of those Coles ribbon mics in anger.
Yeah.
He was very pleased with those.
Yeah, people do seem to rate Coles a lot.
Good thing he wasn't here to talk about those horrible Behringer copies. The little USB ones.
Yes.
Horrifying. I only saw those a couple of months ago when I popped in for some strings or something.
The little tiny one.
Travesty.
They were so cheap that one of my colleagues bought one just to have as a desk ornament.
Oh, yeah.
Not to use.
Amusing. Yeah, please don't use it. I assume it wasn't a ribbon mic in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Here's an idea, Pete. Just thought about it because I really do want to try other microphones. Do you reckon we could go on a little field trip to somewhere like KMR and say, hey, we want to shoot out our SM7Bs with a whatever it is, the company KU5A and a U87 and the one that we're thinking of, the Ultra something with the dynamic in the words. Why can't I remember these names? What's happening?
Because you've been out of the business for so long.
Yeah, RE20, Electro Voice. It's not Ultra anything, is it?
Yeah.
I was thinking Ultra Dynamico, but those are bike tires. See what you've done?
I know.
But no, that'd be cool. KMR. If they'd let us record samples of all of them to take home and listen to later.
I don't know
how good they are at this, how flexible and accommodating they are in the sales process, like we always used to be.
I'm reasonably determined to get my hands on a RE20 permanently. But they are a lot of money.
$585.
Yep, 600. And it's almost 2 7Bs.
It's AEA is the company that makes the KU5A. So come on, KMR, you've got them. Yep, that's $1,080. No, it's even worse. It's $1,299. They list the XVAT price on sort of the Google thing to tempt you in.
Yeah, slap VAT on top of it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if you get VAT registered in whatever business you might run and write it off as a business expense,
yeah,
save yourself 200 quid-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I imagine U87 is going to be, what, 2.5?
Yeah, they are up there.
Oh, yeah, 2,449.
Yep.
Although you can get one for £2,359 if you don't want the shock mount.
Just buy a TLM 103.
That would be a good field trip. We should do that.
Yeah, we could certainly try it. Where are they?
They're London-ish somewhere.
London-ish?
Yeah, they're sort of on the outskirts. You can drive there without it being completely miserable.
Okay.
Oh, but it's North London. Yeah, no, it's not even North London. It's just north of London. It's near Barnet.
Okay.
A little jaunt around the M25, why not?
Yeah, I've driven around the M25, completely circumnavigated it on the same day on a couple of occasions.
Why? Well, just because of what you had to do?
Well, I had to go to a point which was equally distant either way, so I came back around the other way.
Just do a bit of sightseeing from the car while you're at it.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's not a lot to see, is there? Mm-hmm. It's all motorway. Except you get the toll on the tunnel.
Of course, the thing that's the,
mm-hmm.
names of places. And things and items and objects.
I know exactly what it's like.
Dartford, yes. That's the guy.
Dartford Crossing.
We've been rambling like proper English people. Traffic, weather and whatever.
Yeah.
Let's round it off, shall we? Sorry to cut you off there, Pete. Let's round it off with the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I'm going to go for a YouTube channel, because I can. This one I stumbled across today, Gawks 2, I think, G-A-W-X space 2, appears to be a gentle chap who is into his filmatographer cinematographs, that is the cinematography, does these little sort of travel, not vlogs, they're... Ooh, what's the word I'm looking for? That's the majority of this podcast, is me forgetting the word for things. Vignettes, that'll do. Very nicely framed, filmed, colour graded, with generally some classical music in the background. And we've got Los Angeles, Japan, Mexico City, green, interesting, Great Britain, ice, fog, and it's all about favourite places and sights, and there's something about them. Take a watch. Gawks 2, G-A-W-X 2, Gawks with a camera is the description of the channel. It doesn't tell you much, but they're rather wonderful. Enjoy. Pete, what have you got for us?
Right, it's another YouTube channel, really, really esoteric.
Mm.
I only found it today as well.
Yeah.
And it's only got 70 subscribers.
Wow.
Me being the 70th.
Incredible.
Anyway, the channel is called Abound Sound. This channel is all about music and custom created instruments. Janice is an engineer, artist and musician who revels in creating and experimenting. Basically, it's about creating specialized instruments for, in this case, creating generative ambient music. So this lady has created, I'm not sure if it's a module, it seems to be sitting in a, she's got a kind of rack set up with a Volker drum.
Oh, is it a Volker drum?
In the top, and these units below, and the units are called...
Oh yeah, Volker drum. So it looks like we've got Moon Maker.
Mood.
Is it Mood?
Yeah, M-O-O-D, Mood Maker. Yeah. So this lady's created this, I don't know what, is it a module, is it a pedal? I don't know what it is.
They certainly look like pedal chassis.
Yes, but they've got no pedal switches.
Mm.
But the primary one is called a Mood Maker,
yeah,
and it sends out MIDI on various channels that's generative and is responding to the temperature and pressure fluctuations in the room.
Damn, that's cool. And then I'm looking at one here, there's a little sort of touch controllery thing in the middle, it seems, as well.
Yes, it doesn't seem to talk about that much.
Mm.
But most of the videos, and there's only 9 videos on there, are examples of the ambient music that she's created, and she's using the Volker drum as not a drum.
Yeah, I was thinking it sounded a little bit too spacey for drums.
And a whole clutch of reverbs as well.
Good stuff. You can never have too much reverb.
No, you can't. Well, actually, you can, but...
No. No, I'll fight you on that.
Fair enough.
No such thing.
Okay. But, yeah, so worth a watch or a listen. And I'm quite interested in the product. It's not really a product yet. It's using some sort of Arduino processor and certain types of thermal and pressure sensors, I would imagine, and some sort of MIDI circuit. And I hope she converts this or transitions this into an actual product or actually releases all the various bits and pieces. Maybe she could put out the programming on GitHub.
Yeah, quite possibly. Either way, 72 subscribers now.
Yes, there you go. So that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Abound Sound.
Wonderful stuff. Ladies and gentlemen of the audience, thank you once again for tuning in to our little corner of Tinternet, and we hope to see you next time. Farewell!